Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Dan Wyke of the Orange County Register. It's been a while. You're out on Chipotle, so I believe you're Sofritas to pick something else?
I'm free of Sofritas, so like, you could work pun magic with that, I'm sure. So yeah, I'm out. Momentarily, at least.
Is it because, know, thinking... did you go into one and they didn't recognize you, and so...
No, you know, I decided to try to start watching my sodium. in a very exciting turn of events, I've decided that maybe my diet was a little salt heavy.
Okay.
So that being said, I just ate French onion soup for lunch,
which,
so,
as we all know, is very low sodium.
Super low sodium.
Yeah.
I cooked it myself though. I made it myself. I made it at home, like with white wine and stuff. Not today for lunch, just leftovers. But
okay.
I've had a very good run lately on cooking soups.
What kind of mindset? I could see this if you were in the Midwest or if you were in the Northeast, but I don't buy someone saying, you know what, it's 70 degrees in LA today, I'm going to cook soup.
Okay, well, here's what happens, all right? That's a great point. When you live in a place where the weather fluctuates between 67 and 76 degrees for most of the year, if it's 65 degrees out, I'm freezing.
Okay.
Like, I'm super cold. And if it's 78 degrees, I'm super hot. Like,
yeah.
My tolerance for that type of stuff, so like, you know, like today, I think it's like in the mid-70s. I remember growing up, we had a rule at my school that you could only wear shorts, I think, once it got above 65. Like,
oh.
That was like the dress code rule at my school in Illinois.
Okay.
All right. St. Peter. Great, great, fine academic institution.
Shout out to St. Peter, yeah.
Okay. Now, if it was 65.1 degrees, you best believe that I was grabbing a pair of shorts when I was, you know, 9, 10 years old. This is the first, like I checked the paper, 65.1 or whatever. Newspaper didn't have live weather then, but you get the point.
Right.
All right. Also, shout out newspapers.
Shout out to newspapers. We miss those.
Yeah. So first thing I would do would be like, you know, 65 and above, wearing shorts. 65 degrees now, Zach, and it's like, I'm looking for a sweater.
Yeah.
I'm cold in 65 degree weather.
Yeah.
So, to your point, I'm cold and I'm probably making some sort of soup as well.
Okay. I'm with you on this low sodium thing just because I'm out on salt.
Yeah.
I can't think of the last time I added salt to something, like used a salt shaker. So now the shake it like a salt shaker, it means nothing to me now because I'm out of practice with it.
Here's why we're friends, is because you beat me to an Outcast reference there. I don't like salt per se. I like things that are salty.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I don't like that salty taste anymore. I don't like the salty.
See, like I like potato chips. I like tortilla chips that are salted. I like. You know, a really good example of something would be that I like soy sauce. I was just thinking this. I was at sushi the other night. Soy sauce, maybe my favorite condiment to actually add to something.
Had sushi today, I will not add soy sauce to it anymore. I don't.
Really?
It doesn't do it for me. I'd rather the wasabi or whatever, but I don't want soy sauce with my sushi. I don't want soy sauce, period.
Okay, here, another quick question about sushi, and then we can talk about basketball. And
yeah, I've got a transition too, so this is good.
Okay, so whenever I go to sushi, I always come out of it thinking like, okay, I'm going to like take some element of the sushi, and I'm going to incorporate this into my daily snacking routine. Because it's always a super fun, pleasant, you know, like whether it's like, oh, maybe I'll go buy some edamame
or something like that.
You know, and I'll have that around the house instead of some chips. The thing that I always leave sushi wanting and I've never done is ginger.
I'm not a ginger guy.
See, I love ginger at sushi restaurants.
Yeah.
And if there was a bowl of it just like sitting out, like, you know, like some people have like bowls of candy at their house.
Like those ginger snaps and stuff, yeah.
I just want a bowl of like sushi grade ginger.
Sure.
Is that a thing? Can you?
I'm sure. I mean, I'm ginger. We'll have one of the listeners see if that's a thing that you can just get regularly.
Mail it to me.
See that? Yeah,
I will shill. I will shill for the ginger.
Send
people.
It to the Orange County Register, care of Dan Wyke.
Big Ginger. Are you out there, Big Ginger? I'm here for you.
That's why I'm one of the best people to go to sushi with. Because if someone says, "Are you going to eat your ginger?" I always say no, and then they can have it, and then they get extra ginger.
Very
for them.
Good.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of things that are salty, people sure are salty about those Los Angeles Clippers.
Oh, there we go.
How about that?
What a guy.
People don't like him.
Yeah, this is fun. We're back to this, huh?
Yeah.
Like, this has kind of been a fun little story. And I think the fun that I have talking about with people, some people work for the Clippers, is that, it's kind of juxtaposed by how everybody loves the Warriors.
Okay.
Or does everybody love the Warriors? I feel like people like the Warriors.
I don't think there's a lot of anti-Warrior stuff outside of, like, maybe a couple of rivals. Like, the Rockets don't...
Sure.
Rockets fans don't like the Warriors because they want James Harden to win MVP, and there's constant sniping back and forth. I'm sure Clippers fans hate the Warriors because, you know, it's a division thing and the playoffs last year. Like, that's all a thing.
Okay, but they're like the general public.
I think the general public loves the Warriors. Not even like just doesn't dislike them. I think they love the Warriors.
Okay, so I think that's like the fun juxtaposition because there's a feeling that 4 years ago maybe when the Clippers first got Chris Paul and Lob City was happening and, you know, you get things like the Perkins dunk and you know, that the Clippers were likable.
Yeah, people loved them.
Like, they were like a really fun team, and then it's kind of... So here's what I'm going to put to you. Now, the Warriors obviously have had a fantastic regular season. Amazing. I think they're the best team in the NBA.
I think they've been one of the 15 best teams in the league this year. Easily.
Yeah. I'm confident in saying that the Golden State Warriors for sure are a playoff team.
Yeah.
They deserve that. But let me throw this at you. Are they kind of like early Lob City Clippers, but with like threes instead of dunks?
It feels like that. It is kind of a similar feeling.
Like, in terms of like people are like super in on them, and the stuff that they're doing now, if this was happening 4 years after seeing it for 4 years, would people be a little more, you know, okay, we're sick and tired of watching Draymond Green, you know, get into stupid little feuds with everybody, you know, we're sick of watching, you know, I don't know if people ever get sick of watching Steph Curry.
Well,
but like,
that's
the celebrations or the bench stuff. Like,
yeah, I think the celebrations could get old. And I also, I don't think this will happen, but if you told me in 4 years people are going to openly loathe when Steph Curry fires up a three and starts running back before it goes through the hoop, like, I could see that reaction manufacturing or manifesting or something like that in the future. Because they get tired, because we see it so much. Like, I don't really think it'll happen, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that people could get tired of stuff like that, because there is always, like, this love of the new thing, and then the backlash to it is kind of almost foreseeable.
And I want to be clear that I'm not saying this makes the Clippers more likable.
No.
Like, this has nothing to do with
the Warriors are loads more likable than the Clippers. And I don't even care about this, like, Clippers hatred stuff. So that, you know, that I'm no bias.
No, but I mean, I think that's an interesting thing. I think when it comes to the Clippers' likability, there's a lot of factors that go into it. I think the thing that's most encouraging about their likability is they just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah. I
think that's good. I think that's good. Actually, for them, they're kind of their long term. Like, I was reading somewhere, I think it was maybe SB Nation or something like that, that someone wrote something over there that, like, the Clippers should just turn heel. And like, they should just be bad guys at this point. And I don't know that that's necessarily the answer. I think that there are still guys on that team that are very likable, I think. But for whatever reason, maybe I'm too close. You're an outsider on this. When you watch them play, are they a fun team to watch?
I mean, here's the thing. Like, people get really annoyed with teams and players now working the refs so much. And they work the refs more than anybody. I mean,
yes,
from what I see, like, just more than anybody working the refs. That doesn't bother me because, I get it. I get it from a competitive standpoint of you want every advantage you can get. And if you end up getting three calls down the stretch because you were on them about something like that for 40 minutes, like, that's a good trade-off for you, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it'll burn you, but I think for the most part, being on the refs the way they are will most likely benefit them in the long run. I don't know that to be true. That it's just kind of the feeling I get. But I may also be the wrong person to ask about it, because, like, even with all that, like, you know me, I'm not a Matt Barnes guy by any means, but I love Jamal Crawford. I love watching Chris Paul play. I don't care if he's punching guys in the nuts. I don't care if he's complaining to the refs 24/7. Like, I love watching Chris Paul play. I love watching Blake Griffin play. I love watching DeAndre Jordan play. I mean, I love the aesthetic and the basketball skill quality of so much of that team.
And you didn't mention maybe the most fun guy, in my opinion, to watch on that team play right now. That's J.J. Redick.
I love me some shooting and guys that run around and make it hell on the defense, like that Kyle Korver, Richard Hamilton, Ray Allen, you know, Reggie Miller type. Yeah. I love that type of player too. So yeah, he's a lot of fun. Big Baby's fun in his own way.
Turk is amazing to watch.
I don't like Spencer Hawes, so I don't like watching him, but for the most part, I think this is a fun team to watch. I get that the complaining and flopping just doesn't bother me. I don't think
they flop that much anymore, though.
I mean, Chris Paul flops a lot. I think he flops just on offense way more than defense. Trying to draw fouls doesn't bother me, even if you're selling contact or trying to manufacture a call or whatever. I kind of get it. I don't want it to happen all the time, but I also don't think – I think they do it probably more than anybody, but I don't think it's so much more than almost every other team in the league that it's like some crazy end-of-the-spectrum type of thing.
I mean, I can tell you what I see with them from a likability standpoint and kind of my theories, and they haven't really changed over the last couple of years. So, and they're a very overexposed team.
Mm-hmm.
They're on TV a ton.
Yeah, they are overexposed.
And when they're not playing, they're selling you insurance or GameFly or shoes,
Kias,
or your cars or whatever. They're on Jimmy Kimmel, and I think that there is definitely a group of the internet.
A group called the internet
that would much rather see, in a weird way, would like way rather see like Manu Ginobili trying to sell them shoes.
Sure.
And would rather, you know what I mean? It would rather see
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Like, yeah, like some sort of like some like this kind of like a greatness or something a little quirkier than like, you know, like they've gone like mainstream.
They've saturated the market in terms of exposure compared to most teams.
And so I think that's part of it. I think, obviously, the fact that they haven't had a really deep run in the playoffs. Although, I guess, I would say that being in a position to essentially put the Thunder away in Game 5, I mean, they were really close. You know, they were right there. They were on the doorstep of the conference finals, essentially.
Yeah. I don't buy into that, like, oh, they can't make a deep run. I think just because you haven't doesn't mean you can't. Like, the West is stacked.
Sure.
The West is crazy stacked. So I just don't really get into that whole, like, oh, Chris Paul can't win. He's not a winner. Look, he's never been past the second round. I look at the series he's had and the series his teams have faced, and how many times has he been a hands-down favorite and lost? Like, that's when it's damning to me. I know
outside of the Warriors losing in the first round, if this breaks a certain way, there's not going to be a first-round result in the West that shocks.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like, there's that. Like San Antonio could lose in the first round.
Yeah.
Let's say San Antonio ends up playing Memphis in the first round, they lose. That wouldn't shock me.
No, not at all.
It would surprise me. It wouldn't shock me. Like anything that could happen, you know, 2 through 6, you know, even 2 through 7, if Dallas would probably surprise me.
I think Dallas is set up for the playoffs.
Okay, see? Yeah, I mean, like, I just think that it's just, like, you know, it's going to be, that kind of a thing. I've said it all year, and people accuse me of copping out on it, and then, you know, Doc said something similar not that long ago, but I think if you're good enough to win one series in the West, you're good enough to win three.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's just going to be how it is, so that it's, like, we want to talk about who's a contender and who's not a contender. Anybody you think is good enough to win the first round of playoffs is a contender.
And I also think that I think it's hypocritical for us to talk about how legendary the Western Conference is, how stacked it is, how historically incredible the entire Western Conference has been, you know, in terms of the playoff picture, and that we should get rid of conferences because the West is so good. We should have these conversations for months, and then someone loses in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs, and we go, oh, this team didn't win, they're not good. Like, they have no heart, they can't get it done.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting judging. Like, how do you, like, let's say the Clippers lose in the first round of playoffs. Totally possible. You know what I mean? And depending on who they play, some people would say probable. How do you wrap your heads around a season like that?
Yeah, like, if they lose to Memphis, if they lose to San Antonio, if they even lose to, like, Portland or Houston, like, is that a crazy failure on their part? It could be a failure. I mean, it's clearly, like, it's a failure because you didn't win. But I don't think it's – and that's not just for the Clippers. It's for any team, like you said. I mean,
exactly.
Just about any – aside from the Warriors losing the first round, nothing – I don't even think anything else would shock me. I would just be kind of like, oh, there you go. That's what – you know, that's how it shook out.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, I think, look, like, there's different levels of it. You know what I mean? Like, do I think a Clipper loss to Portland would be disappointing, more disappointing than, say, a Clipper loss to San Antonio? Of course it would. Because, I'm of the opinion that the Clippers are a better team than Portland.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you know, but if they lose to the Spurs, let's say that, you know, this shakes out where they go 2-1 down the stretch, and for winning 55 games, their reward is they play the Spurs. And they don't have home court advantage, and they lose that series. It's going to be really hard to figure out, you know, how big of changes do you need to make. You know, you'll look at your team, and you'll be kind of hard pressed to be like, it'll be very easy to, like you said, to kind of rationalize the losing, and be like, you know, what are we supposed to do? We lost to the San Antonio Spurs in the first round. You know, they're playing as good as basketball as anybody.
Right.
You know, like we could have played that team in the conference finals, and it'll be difficult to kind of now. I think that they haven't come out and said like, oh, well, it's conference finals or bust, or we need to get to the second round. But at a certain point, I think you just need to keep taking steps forwards. This is a team that you know has gone to the second round twice. It's time that they get past that. It's time that they, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, you know, that window's closing. On this team, for everybody to kind of be in their prime together, you got to get to the conference finals soon.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they should. This team's good enough to. I think. I mean, no. All right. I feel a little conflicted because they're not really deep enough. They still don't have a wing defender that I feel can play 30 minutes a game. But you know, that team is on the brink of being good enough to get to the finals. You know, like they have a lot of elements of a team that can get to the finals. So I won't say that they should get to the finals, but yeah, I mean, they should win a first round series against someone like Portland or maybe someone like Houston. I think that they should feel good about those matchups. Doesn't mean they're a lot.
I think they would be. I think they would be favored in both those series.
Yeah, I think they would too, especially with the injuries that Houston has had. You know, without Patrick Beverley, without Moti Unis now, Dwight Howard. You know, is trying to get back. Like they, you know, Houston's especially banged up enough. I would pick the Clippers in that series, just based on the circumstances. And then you get into the second round, and it's all right. Well, you either face the Warriors or you face the Spurs, most likely. If you lose to the Warriors or the Spurs, I just don't see that as a failure.
Yeah. You know,
and I'm not it's not like they're absolved of trying to be successful by any means. I just think
their problems, for sure.
Yeah, I just think
realistic. They would have a chance in they would have a chance in both those series. They really would.
They beat the Warriors. This is a different Warriors team, but they beat the Warriors last year. I mean, they match up decently. Yeah. I don't think they have quite enough to for me to really, like, I don't think I would actually pick them, but I think it would go six or seven, and if it goes six or seven, you have a chance to win that series.
No, and I mean, I think, like, this is a team that's beaten San Antonio twice there in the second half of the season. Not in the second half, since February 1st. And one of those wins in San Antonio on ESPN, I don't know if people remember, it was a Friday night game. It was right before, or maybe a week before Blake Griffin had the staph infection. You know, I talked to a longtime scout after that game who thought that was the best the Clippers had played in 4 years. Against anybody.
Yeah.
You know, where they just ran roughshod over the Spurs.
I mean, it's a really talented team. They have problems, but it's a talented team.
Well, I mean, that's the issue. And what I think makes them an interesting team to judge is that they're like this really beautiful woman that just has like open sores, just like all like, because it's not hard to find the flaws.
You think that right? They're going to put that like in the playoff hype video?
I hope so. Like, drop a comment beat behind that.
Right.
We're good.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but like, that's what they are. It's like, because like, what's good about them is like really good about them.
Sure.
But then it's the stuff that, like, you know, like, yeah, they don't have great depth. Like, that's like not hard to figure out. Like, you look at their roster and you look at the guys they've had to play this year, and you say, you know what, they don't have great depth. And it just is what it is. Now, will that matter less in the playoffs? I would say it will, until someone gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean,
or until there's foul trouble.
I think the more damning thing than their depth in the playoffs is just that they're a mediocre defense.
Well, okay. I mean, there are numbers that suggest that. There are numbers that suggest that they've greatly improved over the course of the year. That, you know, if you start looking at them since the All-Star break, and they've played some good teams since the All-Star break, you know, they're a top 10 defense since then. And they've been, you know, they might even be a top six or seven. They've been good since then. Now, does that mean that'll continue in the playoffs? I don't know. I think they have it in them, just like I think they have a couple pretty stinker defensive performances probably in them.
Right.
You know, they're inconsistent on that end of the floor. That's what that tells me. But, you know, this is a team that I think over the course of the year has gotten better.
Yes, I mean, since the All-Star break, they are seventh. I don't know what that means with that cross-section, but, I mean, they are playing defense better.
Well, I would say, we were talking a little before about Amos. Like, who are the other teams that are in that mix? I'm going to guess without looking, Golden State, San Antonio, Utah. Is Memphis in there?
Those are the top four.
Okay.
Yeah, Washington, so, Indiana, then the Clippers.
Okay. Like, those are good defensive teams.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, now the Clippers might be the anomaly there, and they might be the team that's kind of juked that stat a little bit, but or they might be a team that's actually playing better defense right now than we think. Who knows?
Yeah, no, it's possible. I mean, I just think that you get into a situation, it wouldn't be such a problem against the Warriors just because those matchups seem pretty straightforward, but you get into something like against San Antonio or against maybe even Houston, you know, you get into it where they have really good wing scoring and wing capabilities of playmaking, that's when they're in trouble. And that's when they just don't have the personnel to deal with that, especially if they go into a game lineup where it's Jamal, JJ, and Chris Paul, right? Like they don't, like, you can still make substitutions, you know, in and out of timeouts and dead balls, but they don't really have that guy that they can throw in there and say, all right, go get us a stop. I mean, Matt Barnes is a solid defender, but if he has to play 30, 35 minutes, you know, he's just going to be worn down.
Well, he's going to. I mean, like, I just think he's going to. I mean, and they need him. They need him on the court. He's been very good.
Oh, he's been their best, you know, net rating guy throughout the season.
You know, and he's been, and we'll talk about, like, this. I'll do a little bit of a transition here, too, which is, this has been something I've been thinking a lot about when it comes to my awards ballots.
Oh.
Too. I'm a voter, Zach.
You are
second
a voter.
Second year in a row.
Yeah.
They've asked me back. And when I start thinking about kind of how do I look at a team when it comes to individual awards, and you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a chance. Now, I don't think it will happen, but there's a chance that DeAndre Jordan could be the Defensive Player of the Year, that Jamal Crawford could be the Sixth Man of the Year, that Chris Paul could be on this NBA, and then that Chris and Blake could be all NBA second team. Like, this could happen.
Yeah, I think there are chances of all of that.
And I think one of the things that people really need to consider, too, is I think DeAndre Jordan has a chance to be on the third team. So then you're looking at this and you say, okay, well,
man, that would be crazy to me.
That's a lot for a team that's like the Clippers.
Right.
Like, that is a lot to kind of to hand them from an award standpoint for a team that, in a lot of people's view, is underachieved this year. Now, I as someone who's just seen him play, you know, in person, I think I missed like three games this year. Like, their starters have been so incredible that to me, like, if they had three guys on the top three All-NBA teams, that doesn't scream out of balance to me. It just doesn't. Based on what I've seen, if we're doing it by positions and stuff like that, I think you can make a really compelling case that DeAndre Jordan's been the third best center in the NBA this year.
That's where you lose me.
All right, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I think the three best centers this year have been Tim Duncan, have been Marc Gasol, and have been Al Horford. I think you can throw DeMarcus Cousins in there, but it's tricky with the whole, like, you know, is this team good enough to make him?
Numbers on a bad team.
Yeah, numbers on a bad team, but he's clearly, like, when he was healthy, when he didn't have viral meningitis, and he was in shape because he was able to do his offseason conditioning, you know, it's a small sample, but that team was really good in the first 20 games. And that was because of DeMarcus Cousins. So I think that should factor in. And then just all the chaos after that, once he got viral meningitis and, you know, he's not allowed, you know, it didn't allow him to keep the conditioning up and everything. Like, that's where it gets a little murky to me. But I think those four guys are firmly ahead of DeAndre Jordan. And that's not a knock on DeAndre Jordan necessarily.
No,
I think it's
there are
just
a lot of really good centers. Right?
Yeah, I think sure. Those guys have been that good.
Let me make that, in my opinion, what would be the DeAndre pitch, if you were going to make, okay? Here's a guy who's going to lead the league in rebounding.
Sure.
All right? Well, we'll start with that. Like, he's going to lead the league in rebounding. He's been, 10 defensive rebounds a game, nearly 5 offensive. I mean, and those extra possessions are huge. Here's a guy who's going to shoot 70% from the field. You know, and I know that his kind of degree of difficulty on his shots is lower than virtually anybody else in the league. He should shoot around 70%. They still count.
Well, if it was that easy, everybody would only do that, right?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I know it's not turnaround face-up, you know, skilled bank shots. You know what I mean? And it's not post moves necessarily. But, like, those 10 points a game, huge. Because they're momentum points, and, like, he doesn't miss. He doesn't waste possessions for you missing.
Well,
it just doesn't happen.
Free throw line.
And, you know, at the free throw line.
Yeah.
That's where that hurts. But even that has some weird intrinsic value. You know, I've talked to Chris Paul about this, and there's a reason why there's two reasons, really, why they win games where the hack a DJ happens, generally speaking. And neither of those reasons are usually because DeAndre Jordan made a bunch of free throws. It's either, one, they're playing well at the start of it. You know what I mean? You don't do it when you're losing.
Right.
So that kind of poisons the sample at the beginning. But then the other thing, though, too, is it just gets them in the bonus faster.
Yeah, and that's a team that likes to draw fouls.
Yeah, and Chris Paul is a guy who can exploit that. that's what he does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so even though DeAndre is missing free throws and you know, generally speaking, not, you know, he's missing a lot of free throws. I think, though, like, again, there's even value in him just getting to the line.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a little overblown.
And then I would say there's the defense stuff, which is where it gets really confusing to talk about him.
Well, that's the thing, is because they're and I don't think this
so
means
many,
everything.
There's so much information about him.
Yeah.
And it's all conflicted.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're a better defensive team with him on the bench, which is weird. And a part of that is, like, you can get into the whole context of, well, those are second units going against second units, and
yeah,
the game's sloppier and stuff. Right. And so that all factors in, but they're not that good with him on the floor in terms of over the course of the entire season.
I think 16th.
Yeah.
This year, which is weird. Now,
I don't think he's a bad defender. I think he's a great, I wouldn't say great. I think he's a very good defensive presence. Because he does prevent stuff
defensively, and we can kind of move this into the defensive player of the year thing, which has gotten tremendous traction this year. It's kind of it's been good for blogs, for sure. It's been good for copy. It is what I do as a voter, and I don't know who else does this. I assume most voters do this, but you know, I certainly consider my opinions very heavily. I talk to coaches, not just guys on the Clippers. You know what I mean? I talk to players and not just guys on the Clippers. I talk to scouts who don't work for the Clippers, Scott said do. And I try to kind of put it all together. And the thing, and I read what things like what, you know, what Matt would write about numbers, what Tom Haverstraw would do, what Ethan writes, different guys all over the NBA, Zach Lowe, like, I try to read as much of their stuff and try to come to some sort of conclusion, right?
Feels like you're forgetting somebody really important.
Zach Harper?
Yeah, maybe him.
See, the problem is I don't know how a deep dive into Tokyo Drift is going to be a player of the year, Zach.
Well, then you're clearly not reading close enough.
Yeah, so, like, DeAndre Jordan is sort of like a souped-up 2001 Mazda. and the thing that stands out to me, and this is, I can't express this enough, and I don't know what I'm doing yet. I really don't. And I've got to figure it out. I've kind of set Sunday as sort of a target day for me to vote. That every time that most of the conversations I've had with opposing coaches, most of the conversations I've had with opposing players, and most of the conversations I've had with opposing scouts, one name has come up for Defensive Player of the Year more than any other, and it's DeAndre Jordan. And so how can that be possible? And then this is what I've been trying to figure out. When the rim protection numbers are so bad, when the Clippers are, not so bad, but the middle of the road, when the Clippers are an average defensive team, how do we get to DeAndre Jordan as Defensive Player of the Year? And the things that it can't all be intangibles. You know, I saw something yesterday, and I don't even know if this is a thing or not. But, you know, as far as big men who've run the most miles this year, that DeAndre Jordan's at the top of that list.
That's a weird. That's a weird stat.
Yeah. Well, why that stands out to me, watching that, and I don't even know that this matters or not. But like watching the Clippers, like I know that DeAndre Jordan takes a ton of offensive possessions off over the course of the game. I'm sure if you watched the Clippers enough, you've seen it where he'll get a rebound. They'll get in transition, and DJ will just stand back at the free throw line for the first 10 seconds of the possession. And if he needs to run down and set a screen, he will. If not, he'll just stay there.
Right.
Like, this happens multiple times over the course of the game. So what that tells me is that this – and it's even when he's in the half court, it's not like he's moving a lot. You know, he's a center. He's either running from the block to set a screen or diving. Like, that's essentially there's some – it's very contained movement inside the three-point line. So for him to get that much on the synergy data, he's got to be everywhere on defense, right? Isn't that what means?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, he's also running the floor in transition probably more than any
sure.
other big man. So
that's part of it.
That's going to contribute as well because he gets out in front, and gets lobs from Paul and everything and Blake Griffin.
And that happens, but that might only happen four times a game.
Yeah.
Season, that's going to move him up.
Yeah,
sure,
but how many centers have that happen four times a game?
None.
Right.
None.
I mean,
absolutely.
Maybe Andre Drummond. Like it's
exactly.
Yeah.
So I think I know also too kind of what's asked of him defensively, and the kind of the ground that he is in their defense, kind of given to cover, and the responsibility he has. And it's like all of a sudden now some of that stuff doesn't seem as crazy to me. I don't know what to do with that. And it's a really interesting thing. I mean, people can scoff and stuff like that. But I mean, like, you know, when you hear like Byron Scott, and not that he's the most respected coach by the
internet. Probably killed DeAndre's case.
No, well, you have guys like, you know, Terry Stotts has talked about him. You know, you've got guys like, you know, Scott Brooks, who coaches Serge Ibaka, you know what I mean, saying things like DeAndre's is the best defensive big in the NBA. It's just all these, there's these weird little things. Now, part of this is kind of the game that sort of people play is like when you ask a player about another player or a coach, 90% of the time they're going to say something nice.
There's going to be some kind of platitude, and yeah.
You know, normally. Like, right. This is just what happens. Right over the course of the year. This is like where, you know, things like how, oh, this player gave this player his endorsement and stuff like that. Well, you know, sometimes if you'd frame it maybe the question a little differently, maybe someone else will get endorsed or something
right.
like that. It is, though, it happens with enough frequency where I am forced to look at this and say, why is this not squaring with the numbers that I'm reading? and, you know, trying to figure it out. And I still haven't figured it out. But I do know that he's important defensively.
Yeah, I think he's important defensively as well.
And I think, though, and again, I think he's super important offensively. And I like the things that if we're going to look at, you know, like a guy like Horford, right, like is a guy that when you talk about him as an all-NBA center, a lot of it is because, you know, his floor spacing, the things that he does for them can make things so much easier because it's not his numbers.
Right, right. You know, no, like, it's not his numbers, but it's the impact he has on the game. And I think DeAndre Jordan has a positive impact, but it's one thing. It's one thing to say he has a positive impact, and it's another thing to say that he's been the best and most impactful defensive player in the entire season. Because I look at it, and I'm like, Tim Duncan has been 100 times better defensively than DeAndre Jordan because Tim Duncan's just been phenomenal. And that's
he's been great.
Yeah, and so I look at him, I look at Marc Gasol, and I'm like, well, DeAndre Jordan isn't even the best defensive center in the league this year, so how can he be defensive player of the year?
No, and I think that's something that, I mean, I tend to kind of, you know, that's a really strong case for not, for, you know, for not voting for him.
Yeah, and I think some of the, and I've joked about it plenty on Twitter just because it's easy jokes. You know, I'm going to go for the low-hanging fruit.
That doesn't sound like you.
but it is something where, I think he should get a little bit of consideration, but just a little bit. And outside of that, they're just, like, Tim Duncan, Draymond Green, even Kawhi Leonard, even though he's missed so much time, Marc Gasol, like those guys to me truly deserve like real consideration above DeAndre. And that's why I just can't get behind the idea.
I mean, I can tell you they're getting it.
Yeah.
You know, at least for me. And I don't know. I very well might vote for DeAndre Jordan.
Look, we had Marcus Camby win a defensive player of the year when he had no business doing it. And so
It's a hard award to vote for.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just easy
to look at the block numbers. Different things.
Yeah.
You know, and if I vote for DeAndre Jordan, it will almost certainly have nothing to do with his blocks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would have way more to do with his defensive rebounding.
Yeah.
Than it would have to do with his blocks. You know, and it'd have to do with him, you know, watching him this year clean up possession after possession like that. And it would have to do with, you know, hearing him in games call out opposing plays, you know, based on the coach's hand signals.
Right.
And I know other guys do this, but you know, he's really good at it. Now, where it gets tricky and where you can kind of fall down this rabbit hole was if he's so good at it, why aren't they better than 17?
Yeah. Well, there's obviously, this is me guessing a lot here. I do look a lot and think, it doesn't look like DeAndre's in position. And that's me not being totally familiar with their scheme and stuff, but there are times where I think, why is he having to cover so much ground here? Well, maybe he's making up for someone else, or maybe he's just not in good position. But that's something where just like, if we're going eye test, I feel like there are a lot of times where I'm like, oh, why is he over there when he's trying to get, when he needs to be over here kind of thing.
I mean, I think the people who like him as a defender, you know, would say that he's covering for.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's not so much an indictment on him as me just a little puzzled just from, you know, kind of a layman's eye of trying to figure out what's going on the court.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, I asked one player, you know, last week about Defensive Player of the Year, and the case for Draymond was made fairly easily. Which is that what he does for Golden State is they're the best defensive team in the NBA. But because he's able to switch on everything, that makes them the best defense.
Yeah.
They can do more defensively because he's the Swiss Army knife that can really, like, people say this all the time, like, he can guard 1-5. But Draymond actually guards 1-5.
He legitimately does. He's like one of the few guys that we talk about doing that actually does it.
Yeah. So, you know, but then I talked to another player who completely dismissed Draymond. And then I spoke to another guy, someone connected with the Warriors organization, who said that if he had one vote for Defense Player of the Year, he would vote for Andrew Bogut.
Well, yeah, that's the other guy that I haven't even mentioned yet, is that Bogut only plays 24 minutes a game, but he's actually been the best defensive center. He just may not play enough.
Which, so, like, you know, we've got all of this information You know, and then I talked to another guy, and, you know, and I point blank said, who's the best defensive player in the league? I mean, isn't that who should win it, right?
You would think.
And that name is Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all of this stuff, all of this information is floating around inside a voter's head. You know, so when the votes become public, and this is for all you trolls that listen to this podcast, I'm turning bad guy now. For all the trolls that listen
You're
to this
turning
podcast,
heel.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When the votes come out and you don't like what the local radio guy voted and stuff like that, or you don't like who the TV guy voted or who the beat reporter voted for, just know that there's a ton of information that goes into this. And just because, you know, it's not Rim Protector of the Year, it's not Defensive Rating of the Year. It's a lot of different stuff that go into this, and I think it's nobody has the exact formula for it yet. If there was one, it'd be a lot easier to pick.
Yeah, I mean, so, there are
I,
some...
I don't know, you kind of want to talk through my ballot a little bit?
Yeah, let's
Are you interested in this?
Yeah, I'm absolutely interested in this.
Okay, so MVP, I'm down to either Hita Turkoglu or Glenn Davis.
Yeah, no, can you split the vote between Turkoglu and Glenn Davis?
Okay, so it's funny you say co-MVP. In the last 3 days, Jamal Crawford has said that, you know, I don't think there's ever been a co-MVP, but maybe this is the year for it. And Blake Griffin today made a little news by saying that he would vote for James Harden. However, this is where it gets tricky and where Twitter and stuff exists. And the full context of the quote is then he also says, if Steph Curry won, he would deserve it. I just think James Harden deserves it too. So that's almost like a sneaky backdoor kind of, you know, advocation for another co-MVP. I have no idea what to do. My gut says James Harden is the MVP because of the injuries they've had,
mm-hmm.
and what they've had to do to get in the position to maybe finish with the second best record in the West. But every time I watch Steph Curry, he makes three or four shots, Zach, that would make you blush.
Yeah. And you've seen the shots that I take.
I know. And it seems like every time there's a big shot to be made, he makes it.
Yeah. My take on it is, for the people who say it's Steph Curry and it's ridiculous that we would even consider anybody else, I think that's ignorant. I think that lacks so much context of the season and what goes on, and the fact that Houston is second in the West despite, you know, missing Dwight Howard, who's, you know, the team is built to have Dwight Howard and James Harden on the court. And
yeah,
they've, you know, I think I've said this a few times on the podcast, but their most reliable players next to James Harden this year have been Donatas Montiunas and Corey Brewer. Like, think about that. That's insane. And the fact that they're the two seed, like, that matters. I would still give it to Curry. I have no problem if someone votes for Harden. I think that, and I don't know that this should matter, but when we look back at this season, I just feel like we're going to think of it as the Steph Curry season. And
yeah.
And while Harden has done
I
so much
that.
More pulling his teams to victory, you know, how worth it is, you know, how much value is there in the fact that Curry helps end games before the fourth quarter starts? And then those
Huge.
Guys and then those guys get to rest, and then they're fresh for the next game, and then they win 66 games, and then they're fresh for the playoffs, and maybe they go on a late run because they didn't have all those extra minutes in the playoffs. You know, that's probably the tipping point for me. But if you say, well, where would the Rockets be without James Harden doing all these heroics late in games, then I'm just going to, oh, yeah, no, I see that point. Go ahead, vote for him.
Yeah, and for me, like, look, I mean, these are two players who've gotten way better defensively, too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Steph Curry, by the way, is a guy that would come to town and you'd salivate. You'd be excited about playing him because, yeah, he's going to score, but you knew he was going to turn the ball over and you knew you were going to get yours, too.
Yeah.
Now, he's still going to probably turn the ball over a little bit, but, you know, he's going to make you work way more on defense than he ever has had to before. Maybe the part of that's a lesser load because of the minutes. That could be a lot of things, you know. And for me, again, this is a hard thing to look at numbers because, of like what you said, their point differential is so much.
Right.
That, like, you know, there's all these fourth quarters that he's – all these minutes he's not playing. I don't know. I mean, I do know this. I think for me, I think LeBron's third.
I don't have a problem with that.
For me, that's where he goes. I think my ballot, generally speaking, right now would be Curry, Harden in some order. Here's the other thing, too. If Steph Curry doesn't win MVP, what do you have to do to win MVP?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you could say the same thing about James Harden.
Well, I mean, you win more games.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
but does he have to become a medical trainer? I mean, they've won 53 games with all those injuries. I'm not saying, oh, you have to vote for Harden. I'm just devil's advocate.
Go back to college, James Harden, and become a certified athletic trainer. And then I will get to, and maybe instead of Houston sending out, little tchotchkes and stuff like that, report, maybe we should put that money into a fund to send James Harden certified athletic trainer college.
What if Curry was secretly like pre-med at Davidson? And he's helped figure out his own ankle problems, help Bogut stuff. Like, maybe he is the MVP. Most valuable practitioner.
Most valuable person. I mean, look, they're going to win. Gosh, they could win 67 games.
Yeah.
That
doesn't happen so often.
No, and he's the best player on that team.
Yeah.
By far.
I always dislike
to me, that's the thing. It's sort of like if you can't have the year that he's had and you win 67 games, now he's on a much better team.
Mm-hmm.
I would say different stratosphere better.
Yeah, absolutely. And better coach, even though Steve Kerr is a first year guy, clearly a better coach than McHale.
Great staff. There's a lot of things working, and it's I saw someone the other day talk about, he should be on a better team. He makes, $10 million less a year than James Harden. Well, he makes what he makes.
That's irrelevant.
It doesn't matter that. So I don't know that we should penalize him for being on a team that's been healthy, for being on a team that's been great all year.
Right.
Because he's a huge part of making it great. Okay. It's a tough one. I think for me, 4 is probably Chris Paul.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
A guy who has had, when you factor in the way he shot the ball, a historically great season. Just doing things that guys don't do, number-wise, with assists and rebounds and field goal percentage. Three-point percentage has been great this year. A huge part of the reason why the Clippers are going to sniff 55, 56 wins.
I looked at it maybe last week and just ran a search through Basketball Reference, and it was guys with his assist percentage high or higher, and then guys with his turnover rate or lower, and it had happened 3 times in history, and it was him all 3 times. And so, it's kind of you look at it and you think, sure, you can nitpick and Chris Paul's been terrible in the clutch this year. Just has been awful. Just can't shoot the ball. I think he's under 30% or maybe at 30% this year. And so that sucks. But there's also a guy that controls the game for, 40 minutes a night and controls it with an accuracy in terms of not giving the ball away and helping his teammates that only he's ever done. And that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I think that, I remember early, right before the All-Star game, when people were leaving Chris Paul off All-Star teams for Damian Lillard.
That was crazy to me.
I ran, Damian Lillard, great player, by the way, not as good as Chris Paul.
Right.
I would run through against the Basketball Reference. Kind of a player comparison at that time where Chris was, with assists. I think it was assists, steals, field goal percentage, and points. Maybe rebounds too. And there were two other guys who had ever done it, multiple times. But those guys were Magic Johnson and Oscar Robertson. So
decent players. I've heard of them.
Yeah. Okay. This is pretty good company. So. To me, that's where he goes. So then the question becomes for fans, is it Russell Westbrook or Anthony Davis? For me, I think I'm going to lean towards Westbrook.
Yeah.
Again, that's kind of more, Anthony Davis has been incredible. It's just the fact that the Thunder is still even sniffing the playoffs is outrageous.
The thing to me. I think I probably wouldn't have Chris Paul in the top five. I think I'd probably go Westbrook 4th and then Anthony Davis 5th. But it's just a game of rock, paper, scissors, where I don't really think there's a wrong combination of those two.
Sure. No, and I mean, I think, if we want to be even real about it, you can even talk about LeBron, too. That's not there in 10 for me either. That's just kind of, I think, where I'm going at this point. It's a really compelling race. I had written something earlier this year where this year, who you like for MVP this year kind of says what you think about that award,
right?
In general, you know what I mean? Does it go to the best player in the league? Does it go to the? Because here, for all of us talking about Harden and Curry, neither of those guys are the best player in the league. Right. It's LeBron James.
Right.
Still the best player in the league. Still the best player in the world. You know, and I and he's had a great year. You know, he's had a great year on a team that looked like a total train wreck. You know, a couple months ago. Now, how do you factor that? I think it isn't a 2 month award. I think it's an entire season, which is kind of why it's been whittled down. I think to Curry and Harden, but it's fascinating. I mean, we talked about Defensive Player of the Year. What do you think on Coach of the Year? I think I've got my mind made up on this.
I think it's Kerr.
That's where I'm going.
Yeah, it's Kerr. Budenholzer should be right there. I hope he's second. Close in the voting. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, Kerr inherited a 50-win team, and then he made them historic. And yep. you could argue that's harder to do than taking a bad team and making them good.
The fact that they've been able to maintain what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, and it's
despite changing and really improving what they're doing offensively. It's a credit not only to Steve Kerr; it's really a credit to him and his staff, an amazing staff. Golden State.
Yeah. Well, and maybe it should kind of morph into like the coaching staff of the year award because things are so, you know, so broad now with responsibilities and all that stuff. Like I wouldn't mind it kind of factoring those guys in to give the assistants their due as well. But you look at, I mean, this is a team that took two former All-Stars with pretty high confidence in themselves in Andre Iguodala and David Lee. And they were helped out by the David Lee injury, but Steve Kerr took those guys and said, "You're coming off the bench for these two young guys, and trust me, it's going to work." And Clay, you know what you've been doing. Well, I need you to do a lot more. And Curry, I need you to be a good defender. But you know that's and to get it all to work. I mean, my God, like that's a lot of coaching for in your first year. And yeah, he's been helped by Ron Adams.
Here's the other thing too. It's like he replaced a coach that a lot of guys in my locker room liked.
They loved him. I mean, almost everybody but Bogut, right? Like, everyone loved that guy.
Well, I mean, I think that I wouldn't say everyone. I mean, that's from what I've heard. But other than Bogut, I mean, there's some other guys. But, like, he was, by and large, very well thought of.
Yeah.
And to replace him, you know, I think you've got even the job becomes even harder. It's, you know, right away you've got to kind of win that room.
Yeah,
and he's done an incredible job. None of this should take away what Atlanta's done.
No, they've been phenomenal.
Amazing season. Have a chance, I think, to go pretty deep in the playoffs. I still have my questions about them.
Sure,
but I'm always going to feel that way, honestly, because I've been conditioned for 30 years to watch basketball in a way where I look at a team and I feel like you should have something that resembles a star. And I just feel that way. It's just how I feel.
I'm with you.
And you know what I mean? Like, you say what you will about how they're playing like the Spurs. They are playing like the Spurs, except they don't have historically great players like Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker.
Right.
Historically great. You know? And to me, that's, I think, kind of what ceilings them. After that, I'll probably vote for Pop third because I think he's always the coach of the year.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways,
to
he's
me,
the best coach in the NBA.
I have no problem. Like, I know they're under 500. Like, I kind of think Brad Stevens would be third for me.
Interesting,
because I just look at that team. That team sucks. Like they have very
that conference sucks though.
Yeah,
and the bottom of that conference is horrendous.
It does, but. All right, hold on. Let me get this. Here are the guys who have played the most minutes for them this year. And yes,
ooh, can I guess?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Go for the top 5 minutes players for the
Avery,
Celtics.
Avery Bradley.
He's one.
Kelly Olynyk.
No.
Over the course of the season,
he's seven.
No, he hasn't.
Seven.
Okay. Hold on. Brandon Bass.
Yes, he's third.
Okay. Gosh, who else is on that team? this is fun. Because of their trades and stuff, this makes it much more difficult. It's not Tyler Zeller. It's not going to win.
No, it is Tyler Zeller. He's fifth.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for Tyler. I like him, by the way.
I think he's a good third big.
Yeah, there was. I had heard something last year that the Clippers, that Cleveland had called the Clippers about offering Tyler Zeller for Reggie Bullock. last year, and the Clippers were not interested in it.
That would not have been bad.
Let's see who else. I'll tell you who isn't in the top five on the Boston Celtics. This year. Celtics legend Austin Rivers.
That's true. He didn't quite make the cut.
Okay, let's see who else could it be. Who am I missing? Crowder.
No, not Jay Crowder. He's eighth. You're missing Evan Turner, who's played the second
number
most
two.
Minutes, and then Marcus Smart has played the fourth most minutes.
See, I didn't think he'd be in there. That's super incredible.
They're in the East, and they're going to make the playoffs because they're in the East. But 36 wins out of that team, and maybe more, that's an incredible coaching job to me.
Yeah, no, that's outrageous. Now, when I factor that in, is that better than?
Is it better than Pop? I don't know. What
about Kevin McHale?
He's done a nice job of kind of marrying the old school mentality with what Daryl Morey wants. You know,
I think it's one of the most interesting things that I've gotten to talk to a coach this year. I had asked him a bunch of questions about analytics, and it was very interesting to hear kind of, you know, from a player who is as old school as, I mean, that's an old school dude.
Oh yeah,
big time. In a very new school situation. Like, you know, I think he will. I mean, we're going to give James Harden supreme credit for kind of getting the Rockets through this roster. Probably should give Kevin McHale some of it too.
Yeah, and Dave Yeager's been great for Memphis. Terry Stotts has been great for Portland.
Terry Stotts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you can't. That's one of those awards that, I mean, and then if you can get cute about it too, you can look at, like, you know, I've heard people talk about, what about Brett Brown? You know, like, that team competes. Like, that's amazing. And sure it is.
Yeah.
You know? The fact that Frank Vogel kept the Pacers kind of connected to the season.
And they still may make the playoffs.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. You know what I mean? The fact that, you know, through all of the kind of random mercenaries that he's been dealt, that Rick Carlisle still has the Mavericks at a pretty sustained level of play throughout the season.
Yep.
You can, I mean, that's an easy one. There's a lot of guys doing really good work coaching.
Yeah.
In the NBA, I think. And certainly where there's more than five, I mean, we can, you know, I mean, Doc Rivers has done a good job. It's not hard to find five.
There. Jason Kidd's done a very good job.
Yes. That was an interesting one. He's had a really interesting coaching year with a bunch of decisions here and there, like things that I didn't necessarily understand, things I still don't necessarily understand. And it's generally worked for them this year.
Yeah.
You know, that's a hard one. Rookie of the year. Interesting again to me. I think it's Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
I really do.
I think it's great that Nerlens Noel and Nikola Mirotic had great marches. I really do. And this is not like me being a Wiggins guy. I don't think they've done close to what he's done throughout the entire season.
I know. And here's, again, the thing, though, is for me, and this is where it gets hard because, you know, that a lot of the stuff is kind of what it means to you. To me, is that if you do what you're doing and you do it on a good team, it should mean more. To me, it does, which is why I look at a guy like Mirotic pretty hard, and I look at him and I say, you know, he carried it again. Like, that team had nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it was like on the perimeter, zero. I mean, no Rose, no Butler, and there's Mirotic. You know, like really, really stepped up. But you're right, didn't probably do it long enough. I think I'm voting Wiggins. Probably Mirotic 2, probably Noel 3. Another guy that I'm going to look at too, I don't know if I'm voting all rookie stuff. A guy, again, if we're going to talk about seasons on bad teams, who has been kind of sneaky fun to watch at times, Jordan Clarkson.
He's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I've had conversations again with people around the NBA who aren't 100% sure if Jordan Clarkson is actually good or not.
It could be, ironically, you know, a Jeremy Lin scenario, where a guy gets to do a lot of stuff without a lot of stakes. Yeah, in a perfect situation, and he's able to produce. Or he could actually be good, or he could just be a rotation guy in the future.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. To me, I think the award that I probably I think it's going to be the most interesting, I think, at Sixth Man of the Year this year. Because
I think it's just an awful, awful year for Sixth Man.
It's not clear cut. It's probably either Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah,
kind of the name. I mean, you can talk about Mirotić if you want.
I was talking with another voter earlier today, and he said he was leaning towards Iguodala, and I like that selection as well.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. Numerically speaking, and again, maybe it's because I'm close to it, I look at a guy like Jamal Crawford and I say, that bench is so bad, they lean on him so heavily to take ridiculous shots to kind of keep them in games. You know, I'll be curious to see if it hurts him that he missed 20 games down the stretch.
Right.
And it's going to hurt him too. Just his kind of the awareness on him. I don't know that I think you want to give the award to the same guy again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I love Jamal, and I think
that's
he's...
That's your guy.
Yeah, it's my guy. I think he's very important to the Clippers, and I think he gets more flack than he should when it comes to really dissecting his game because of what he's asked to do. But even that said, like, I'd have to go Lou Williams this year over him just because I feel like Lou has done it more, and he's done it as well.
Yeah, see, like I haven't watched enough Raptors, and I haven't started my deep dive on like kind of stats yet. I feel like that's a pretty straightforward comparison.
Yes, something James Herbert put me onto when we were talking about this last week, I think, was check out. You can find it on the shot numbers on the NBA.com/stats. Is the reason Lou Williams' shooting percentage is so low? He takes a lot of shots at the end of shot clocks, and that's a lot of like bailed me out stuff. And he's horrible at it. It's like 29% or something like that. But
Jamal suffers from that.
Yeah, Jamal suffers from the same thing. And you look at the rest of the shots earlier in the shot clock, and he's like 45%. And so
You're not going to go wrong with that award because you're probably not going to be able to go super right.
Yeah, this year especially. This is just not a good year for six man.
You know, you look around at the contenders, again, like I said, I think being able to do it on a really good team, I think, means more to me.
Sure.
You know, maybe it shouldn't, but it does. And you go down the list and, you know, Iguodala's there. But after him, you know, who's the great reserve on Houston?
Corey Brewer, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he's been fine. He's been solid. I think the idea that he's a good defender is crazy. Like, he gambles constantly.
Who's the great reserve on the Memphis Grizzlies this year?
I guess Kostas Koufos?
Tony Allen?
Yeah, Tony Allen. I wouldn't hate that. He probably hasn't done enough.
But those guys are good. Like, they're fine.
Yeah.
That's just not what the award is.
Yeah, but has it been... you look at it, have they been the best bench player in this season? Like, no.
Oh, no.
Right.
Oh, no. And that's why, ultimately, I mean, like, I think you can still make a Jamal case. I think you can make a Lou Williams case. I think you can make an Iguodala case. And I think you can make an Isaiah Thomas, too, for sure. He's just – his season has just been so weird with the trade.
Yeah.
You know, and –
Yeah, I was actually talking – I was talking about him with his voter, and it was kind of like, you know, I had said earlier in the week when we were talking about this – you know, I think Isaiah Thomas might get it for me. And then just talking about it with someone else, he was so detrimental, whether it's his fault or not. He was so detrimental to Phoenix this year that maybe that eliminates him. You know, like he's been great for Boston and his numbers are really good for a bench player. But maybe like that Phoenix situation, whether it's his fault or not, is just a little too damning.
Who knows? And like I said, this is hard.
Yeah.
This is not easy. We have time for all NBA team?
Yeah, we can run through that.
I mean, I think the first team is pretty straightforward. I think it is. I mean, for me at least, it's fairly straightforward. I think it's Marc Gasol is to me the best center in the NBA all around, year in, year out. He just is. I think it's Anthony Davis.
I think it's LeBron James, and I think it's Steph Curry and James Harden. It's probably the first team for
me. I agree. I think I might go Duncan first team, but I can't fault you for going Marc Gasol. He's been incredible. And he's done, you know, he's done more with that offense because they've given him a bigger role, and he's excelled in it.
I mean, I look at Duncan. I look at – this is where, I mean, again, my DeAndre opinions are a little more out there than some. Also, by the way, Clippers' best offense in the NBA, DeAndre Jordan – don't sleep on how important he is today.
Oh, their offensive rating with him on the floor is like 15 points better or something. Like, it's something crazy, yeah.
Such a good screener, and like, the threat of him lobbing and, like, him making those hard dives and him getting low, it opens up the deep corner. It allows Blake Griffin to shoot mid-range, wide-open mid-range jumpers. You ever watch Chris Paul and you wonder, how can he possibly get to that elbow?
Yeah, it's because the defense is sucked in.
Yeah, if you stay with them, they're going to throw the ball to the guy who can jump 50 feet in the air.
Right.
Yeah, so important to their offense. And again, the statistics, like the rebounding and the field goal percentage, just historic stuff. You know, like, guys don't do that.
Right.
They don't. Now, whether or not you think that's worthy of an All-NBA spot, that's tough. I don't know. He's a guy I'm considering. Maybe not for the second team, probably for the third team. I think Chris Paul is on my second team for sure.
Yes.
100%. I think Russell Westbrook probably is as well.
Okay.
I think the forward spots, Blake Griffin is there. LaMarcus Aldridge, perhaps. I think are my two second team forwards.
Okay.
And then there was someone else who, and then I think, and then the third team, you know, it's like, that's where I think you'll find guys like Klay Thompson. It's been a really good year, Zach.
It has. It's been a phenomenal year. It's been really fun. Pau Gasol should be in there. Like, I'd put Pau over Blake for second team. Is Jimmy Butler a guard or is he a small forward? Do we know what he is? He's a small forward, right?
I don't know. I would guess. I would have him ahead of Pau. In terms of my Bulls powering, just because.
Defensively.
Yeah,
I don't hate that.
For me.
Yeah.
Like, the Blake thing, again.
If he hadn't missed whatever.
I'm going to sound like a giant Clippers homer no matter what.
I talk with Clippers homer and part owner Dan Wyke.
Here's the thing. This all goes back to the point I think I had earlier, where these guys have had to be this good this year. They've had to be. Because if you look at their team, you say, how are they going to win 56 games? That's how.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how they're going to do it. They're going to do it because Chris Paul has been transcendent. Because Blake Griffin has been really good. Like, such a good passer, such a smart player, Zach. Has really taken a big step. And the jumper, I wrote about that this week. The jumper.
It's really
small
good.
Small sample size, but after, so since he's come back, I kind of wrote off the first week with him still kind of getting used to the elbow. Since then, he shot it better than LaMarcus Aldridge. Small sample size, but just kind of for context.
Yeah.
Like, he's been, and it's not like LaMarcus Aldridge is in a shooting slump right now.
No, he's pretty good.
You know, he's not. But that 15 feet and out, it's been, I think, 2 percentage points higher than LaMarcus Aldridge over the last 8 games.
Well, you know what? Also, for All-NBA third team or maybe even second team for forward, he's missed 18 games, but Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard. That's the other guy.
Throw him in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very, definitely be a guy. I mean, he could be a second team guy.
Yeah.
Really. He's been fantastic. And
he's so good.
It's gonna be very West crowded. I mean, I think Kyrie Irving deserves a lot of consideration.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought of, like, for third team guard, would you go with Kyrie or would you go with Lillard? I think I would go with
Kyrie.
I think I'd go with Lillard, but I don't feel confident about that.
I think the defensive stuff is a little better with Kyrie.
Yeah.
A little?
Yeah, Lillard.
The defensive stuff with Lillard is real, by the way. Like,
yeah,
that's
he's bad.
And that's where the Matthews injury really hurts them.
Yeah.
Has there been enough follow update today?
Not that I've seen, but I haven't paid attention to it.
Okay, yeah. You know, where I think one of the things that kind of kept them kind of competitive over these last 2 years has been their ability to cross match as much, and they've been able to hide Damian.
Yeah.
Because of Batum and because of Wes Matthews.
Right.
That becomes a lot harder to do without one of those guys. No Matthews there. That's a big thing for them, I think. It's like now it's like, okay, now you have to go guard Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And we saw what happened in Portland when that happened.
Yeah, good luck with that.
You know, and that's, to me, that's a big thing with him. And that's why for I tend to kind of put him maybe a tier down, you know. So it's good. I appreciate, thanks for the therapy. Help me talk through this.
Hey, thanks for letting me use your ballot. Because I assume that everything I've said, that's your final decision.
It isn't. It isn't. Like, if we were talking, I don't know, say, what's the best performance in Pitch Perfect?
Right.
I would be able to probably take your opinion a little more seriously. What is the best performance in Pitch Perfect?
Oh, man. I've got the magic in me is... That's tough
that's
to
really
beat.
Good.
Actually, you know what it is? It's the kid that gets disqualified.
Oh.
The
blame
high
it on
school
the boogie?
Kid. Yeah, blame it on the boogie. That's the best one.
That's good. That's a little clean for me, though.
It's too
like
clean.
You know what I mean? Like it's like a little polished.
Yeah, you factor in the dancing and everything. I mean, it's a show. It's not just the singing. The dancing's phenomenal. I think that's it.
I got a hot take for you.
Uh-oh.
Hot Pitch Perfect take. The riff off Songs About Sex performance. That medley.
It's really good.
Really. Also, I don't know if you caught this on the Clippers halftime show. They had this dude with like a pretty serious side part. Playing the acoustic guitar. He sang the national anthem. And I wasn't sure who he was because I'm not in touch with this type of stuff at all. And unless Steve Ballmer's dancing to it, I really don't care.
Sure.
It was Andy Grammer. Does that name mean anything to you?
Andy,
you know who that is?
Grammer?
No, right?
No, not. I don't think so.
He's the guy who sings, "Well, you gotta keep your head up, woo." Like that, like the song that they sing.
Oh, that's his song.
That was him. Yeah, his song. He played it in halftime at Staples Center.
Well, how about that?
I know. See, the Clippers are likable.
They are likable. Because he's definitely not performing anywhere else.
No.
No, he's just sitting on those on that Pitch Perfect residual money.
He's very. I also saw recently Adam Devine from Pitch Perfect and Workaholics, season ticket holder for the Clippers, was at a game with Donald, the guy who does the kind of like the beatboxing for the Troublemakers. Who he's a big Washington Wizards fan. They were there for Clipper Wizards. They were there together, Bumper and Donald.
I mean, that's just they should always be together. Bumper's got to come back, right?
I think he'll be in it. I think they're all going to be in it.
All right, because I'm not going
to. Are you flying out? Are you flying out to come see it?
Okay. When is it?
I think it's next month.
I don't think I can. I mean, maybe I can get CBS to throw me into the Clippers.
The Clippers have to go make a deep run in the playoffs so you can come out. Like you, Ledlow, we can kind of throw this all together.
Yeah, I will pitch perfectly to them, sending me out to the Clippers series. If they get that far and we get to that time frame, I'll see what I can do.
Don't you forget about me when it comes to time for this.
I've put up my fist in the air in that slow, dramatic,
And if they say no, Zach, you just got to keep your head up.
Yeah. All right, well, Dan Wyke, we can follow you on Twitter. Is it still at Dan Wyke Sports?
Yeah, I haven't made a change yet.
I haven't got the change. All right, at Dan Wyke Sports, read you in the Orange County Register, and hopefully I will see you at the theaters. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. See you, Zach.